Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 11th day of August, 2020. It's a Tuesday, which mercifully edges us closer to Friday. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. I am your clean-mouthed host. Yes, not only are my teeth freshly brushed, but I will try to do my best to not swear, or at least keep it as clean as humanly possible during this program. I save up my obscenities now for the Saturday Patreon show. So there you go, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. $5 a month gets you one extra hour plus, so they always go long, of what you really want to say and what you really want to hear said about the news and all the BS that goes with it, uncensored, politically incorrect, and seemingly deliberately offensive. Lots of stuff to get to today. We've got an interview coming up with Dr. Simone Gold. You might remember her from the video that was banned from the internet because it mentioned hydroxychloroquine. All those doctors got together, and her life has been turned upside down because she dared speak her professional opinion and experience. How insane is that? How screwed up is our system that the media is and the Democratic Party are now running healthcare in this country? So we'll get to that. I want to talk about the canceling of college football. It's not complete yet, but the Big Ten has called it a day for the season this year. And it's hard for me to care. I got to be honest. It's hard for me to care. I don't care about college sports. I like championship games, but meh, whatever. When I was a kid, all the bowl games were played on January 1st. And so we'd go over to the Newton house, and Mrs. Newton was from Mexico, I think. And she made this gigantic taco spread. It was awesome. It's the first place I ever saw cable, too, because we didn't have cable for a long time. We're the last family I knew to get cable. Yeah, it was also the first place I saw softcore pornography. I spit on your grave. But that's a story for another day. Hey, man, when you're 10 years old, boobs are boobs. So we got a lot to get to. I want to start off about New Zealand, though, and we'll talk about Chicago, too. But I'm so sick of hearing about how wonderful New Zealand is. So we're going to start with that. But first, I'm going to tell you about ancientlifeoil.com and simply the best 100% pure organic CBD oil available for any human consumption. You go to ancientlifeoil.com. They have different strengths. They have different concentrations. You choose what's best for you, whatever you want. They have minute traces of THC that won't do anything for you, or they now have completely 100% refined THC free, if that is what you're afraid of. The one thing holding you back from giving CBD oil a chance is, well, I don't know, THC, it was never going to impact you. You were never going to notice it. But now they offer THC free CBD oil. That's a whole lot of letters right there. But at checkout, no matter what you order, and they have a whole bunch of products. No matter what you order, if you enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, and click apply, you will save on shipping. Save 100% on shipping. You get free shipping. That's the deal. Enter my name, gets you free shipping, and you click apply at ancientlifeoil.com. Don't mess around with good stuff or stuff some friend recommends. Go right to the best, ancientlifeoil.com. Promo code Derek at checkout. Okay. I've been seeing this a lot lately because New Zealand, the headlines were they've celebrated 100 days of being coronavirus free. They've had no new cases in 100 days. And the left is hyping this, going, oh my goodness, if only we had taken the model that New Zealand had instituted, we would be so much better off right now. We too could be COVID free. There's a big problem with this little theory on the left, and that's what it is. It's a stupid theory, but it's a theory nonetheless. And that problem is they're a freaking island. They are a small freaking island with the population of about Chicago. So if we were just a country the size, the population of Chicago on an island, we could easily, too, have ended our coronavirus outbreak. How? By not letting anybody on the island and then locking down the island. We've pretty well locked down the country. The only real violation of these lockdowns over the past however long it's been, 6 months, have been left-wing nut jobs taking to the streets for so-called justice. Proving again that younger people, while dumb, and apparently maybe COVID-19 attacks people with an IQ, that registers. If you get to that second digit in the IQ, then it will attack you. The young people may not become violently ill from it, the 20-something morons out in the streets, but they sure can spread it. You know, you sure can spread it. It's like HPV. It's the HPV of the left wing. Well, I imagine HPV is rampant too. Men can spread it, but men aren't really impacted by it. Men, in fact, do spread it and aren't really impacted by it. It messes with women. Well, it's really bad for women. Well, you got the same sort of thing here. The young people can spread it. They can get it. They might have the sniffles or a sneeze for a couple of days, and then off they go to grandmother's house or back to their basement with their parents, get their parents sick, and then the parents go to work because the kids are unemployable, and the outbreak spreads that way. Nobody wants to talk about that because the left wing wants these people in the streets. Now, New Zealand locked it down. Very easy. It's already a small population. You don't let anybody into the country. And guess what? Nobody comes into the country with coronavirus. In this country, you talk about securing our border and you're a xenophobic racist Hitler Jr. wannabe monster who needs to be destroyed, perhaps imprisoned. Notice the difference. The country of Mexico is experiencing a significant outbreak, yet a cursory search of the internet shows that illegal immigrants are still marching across our southern border, and the activists who love them and greet them with voter ID cards, Democrats, are still cheering them and fighting their immediate removal from this country. You can find stories in Time and Newsweek about how outrageous it is that people are being removed from this country without a hearing, and they're being removed in an expedited fashion. Well, what in the hell do you want us to do? We are in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. We are trying to get the numbers under control and coming across the southern border freely. Willy-nilly are a group of people that may well be carrying the virus. And in fact, there have been outbreaks in illegal alien detention centers. Are we supposed to just let them in, let them go, give the old pinky swear that they'll show up in court in 8 to 9 months or years or whatever the hell the backlog is now, and assume all is well with the world? No. We need to get their asses out of the country. More importantly, we need to keep their asses from coming into the country in the first place. But the same people who are saying, why can't we be more like New Zealand, are the ones playing Red Rover on the southern border with the illegal aliens. It's not a coincidence. It's not an accident. It's who these people are. Progressives are progressives first, and the individual is expendable and can be damned. Democrats view coronavirus as a boon to them, so they don't want it to go away. They can't stand it going away. That's how you can get the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightweight, cheering protests, saying, I will do anything and everything in my power to make sure that people's First Amendment rights are protested. Meanwhile, she tweets a picture of a bunch of gay men at a beach over the weekend and saying, I will make sure that this never happens again. They're laying out at the beach. Who cares? Let's just take a look at this, shall we? Yes, on Sunday, she tweeted out, it's called a pandemic, people. This reckless behavior on Montrose Beach is what will cause us to shut down the parks and lakefront. Don't make us take steps backwards. And it's people enjoying the beach, seemingly socially distanced, minding their own business, not throwing bricks at police officers. Meanwhile, a month earlier, July 18th, 2020, Lori Lightweight tweeted, quote, hundreds took to the streets yesterday to express their First Amendment right to protest. I unequivocally support and will always fight for the rights of individuals to peacefully protest on any issue. All right, well, they're protesting your lame ass stopping them from going to the beach. There, can you call off the dogs? Maybe if you're really concerned about what's going on in your city, you would have paid attention to the riots that went on Sunday night. Just saying, when your business district is looted and destroyed, maybe that's a bigger priority than a bunch of dudes catching some rays up at the beach. Could be just me. I might be wrong. But I don't think I am. And yes, that's what happened Sunday night in Chicago. Riots. Why? Because of false information spreading, likely with the help of the media, that police had shot a sweet, sweet, nourishing, unarmed 15-year-old who was doing nothing but picking their nose downtown. Turns out that the sweet, sweet, nourishing 15-year-old was older, was an adult, who had shot at police. There were reports of a gunman downtown. Police went to investigate. They saw who they thought was the suspect, and lo and behold, the guy turned around and started shooting at police. One police officer was shot. Police returned fire, killing the monster who deserved to die. That story got twisted on social media and probably by local media, and people got all upset. Why? Because thanks to journalists, thanks to Democrats, but I repeat myself, the public is in a lather, worked up in a lather, going, oh my goodness, can you believe it's open season on young, sweet, sweet, nourishing black men who are unarmed, minding their own business, and they just did it again. Of course, I don't believe for a second the people who went and looted the Miracle Mile in downtown Chicago thought, well, this is what has to be done. This is justice. I think they thought, well, I always did want a new leather jacket, and there is a Coach store down there. Well, you know what? I really wanted a new iPad, and there's an Apple store down there, or there's some stuff down at Nordstrom that I think I'd look really good in. So in the name of justice, I shall go down and destroy it. Now, what was amazing is the police chief on yesterday morning when he did a press conference noted that there had been nine shots taken at police officers, several hits, over the last 7 days. It's open season on cops in Chicago there. Thankfully, people have bad aim, and the morons tend to have bad aim. So they have not killed 9 police officers in 7 days. But you really want to talk about open season, there you go. Also, Lori Lightweight at the press conference said she woke up horrified at what happened to the city overnight, to which I would ask, what in the hell were you doing? Where were you? You sure as hell weren't getting your beauty sleep. I've seen you, Yoda. Why weren't you down there trying to calm this situation? Why weren't you giving the order to the police to put it down, to stop it, to end it? It's a very simple order to give. It just basically involves you saying, hey, enforce the law. Because police are qualified and trained and have the equipment to be able to sweep up large quantities of people. They did, as it turns out, make a bunch of arrests. Now we'll see, not enough, but now we'll see if the prosecutors there drop the cases. That's probably what's going to happen. It's what happens elsewhere in the country when people riot. Oh, well, this is an outrage. We won't stand for this. And then a couple weeks later, when nobody's looking, we go, well, we're going to drop the charges against them. It's unfair. We wouldn't want to ruin anybody's life over this. Hell yeah, we would. Those are the lives we definitely want to ruin, because those lives are going to ruin real lives, lives that matter. I don't care what skin color you are. If you're inclined to riot, your life won't matter. And in fact, if your life would have ended up mattering were it not for your life being ruined for the prosecution of you during a riot, I think I speak for all of humanity when I say that is a trade-off we're willing to make. If this is your natural inclination, if you are default riot whenever you hear anything, I don't care what contributions to society you might have given later on in life. We'll do without it. We'll find 7 billion people on the planet. Somebody else will probably step up and pick up the slack, because you're not really putting your back into it in the helping humanity race here. So that's your Chicago update. What will come of it? Will there be more riots? It's doubtful. They pulled up all the draw. If you've never been to Chicago, the Chicago River runs through the city center of Chicago. It kind of separates the north from the south, south side, where most of the problems are. There are also problems on the west side, too, but there isn't an east side that's called Lake Michigan. But there are only a few ways across that river. If you pull up the drawbridges, it makes it tough to get across that river, because it's like any city. It's not just like, well, you can walk right into the river. You got to jump in and you'd have to be able to climb out. So they will probably have solved the problem temporarily by pulling up the drawbridges, but they will not have solved the problem permanently, because it is the mentality that is the real problem that is instilled in people across this country, not just Chicago, by liberal Democrats and by school teachers. But again, I'm being redundant. And the news media, that they are victims, that they are put upon, that their lives will never amount to anything because of the color of their skin. It's the worst message you could ever give anyone, yet there they are on a daily basis beating it into people's heads, beating into the heads of young kids. And guess what happens to young kids? They grow up. And in Chicago, provided they don't get killed, they end up becoming bitter adults. Can't blame them for being bitter. They've been told by people who are supposed to be looking out for them that their lives are going to amount to nothing because of the color of their skin. They can't get ahead. They've also been told that the politicians whom they elect and have elected for generations will protect them, will make things right, and they haven't made a damn thing right. You would think that sooner or later the angst and anger that they're being instilled with would turn on the people who swore to protect them. Because sooner or later you'd go, wait a second, you said you were going to protect me, and this problem persists. And in fact, it's worse. Economically, it's much worse than it was before you started telling me you were going to make things better and protect me. I'd get pissed. I don't know why those voters don't. But we shall see. We shall see what happens in Chicago. I suspect this will be done because Lori Lightfoot, the best thing Chicago has going for it in the hopes of restoring order to Chicago is that Lori Lightfoot is, in fact, in the national spotlight. She has been standing up to Donald Trump and standing up to Donald Trump, and then 15 people got shot the one day she stood up to Donald Trump saying, "Don't you come near me." And 15 people got shot at a funeral, so she said, okay, we'll take federal help in trying to arrest some of these criminals. So the feds are there. But she said, you can only come in to the city and help us in a very limited role. Well, that means that she has to step up and handle the rest of what she's, well, what's her job description? She should have handled all of it. But she has to step up, or she's going to look even worse. That's the only reason there's hope for Chicago right now. And it's a pathetic reason. It's a pathetic job that she's doing. But she's a Democrat, so it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Speaking of Democrats, really quickly, I saw this story and I couldn't believe it was real, but it is real because this is who Democrats are. And if you think, well, I'm not a riotous mob and your friends and you're a Democrat or your friends are Democrats, tell them this story because this encapsulates liberalism and the modern Democratic Party probably better than any analogy I could ever give you. It's from the New York Post. Washing hair is about to get a lot more complicated if a trio of Albany Democrats have their way. A new bill working through the State Assembly and Senate will require shampoo assistance. Not assistance, but like an assistant to shampoo your hair. Not like you need help with it, but to actually do it in a salon. Working in hair salons to complete a minimum of 500 hours of a 1,000-hour course in cosmetology. The completion of 500 hours will entitle the applicant to a newly established shampoo assistant certificate. I am not kidding. I am not making that up. If I'd have said this story last week, we would have all laughed about how absurd it is. But now it's becoming a reality. Granted, it's only proposed in New York State. But if you think it's not going to eventually become law, you're crazy. And if you think this isn't going to spread across the country, you're insane. But I just want to point out why this is happening. Because you're thinking, well, what in the hell? Is there like different degrees of dandruff, serious dandruff issues? And are the people washing hair not currently tackling the dandruff issue before New Yorkers? No, I think Head and Shoulders could handle that. I think most people could handle their dandruff problems. What's really going on is since there is no current shampoo assistant certificate, they are proposing creating one. They license hairstylists or cutters or whatever the hell they're called. This is why I cut my own hair, so I don't have to learn new terminology. But they already licensed them. They license the hell out of almost everything. But almost is the operative word. They're not licensing everything. So they're bringing it down a notch. Why? Because revenues are low. The coronavirus has depleted tax revenues. They cut down tax revenues significantly. The government wants to, rather than, I don't know, look at their budget seriously and say, what can we cut? What are we wasting? What can we get rid of? They want to find new ways to get revenue. So they say, hey, there are people in hair salons who wash people's hair, who get them ready to do it. Let's require them to get a license. And we can charge them to get that license. Therefore, there are probably a couple thousand people in New York State, if not more, whose job it is to wash hair. We can license them, and then we get more money. That's what it's all about. It's not like there's been a string of horrible hair washing disasters in salons in New York where somebody drowned or something like that. Or worse, their hair came out all snarled and tangled. It's because the government is looking for revenue sources. They're going to license the crap out of everything they possibly can. And then say, well, you need a license to practice this job, to do this job. We can sell you that license. It's a hell of a racket. Only government could get away with it. It's a lot like the mafia. It's a nice business you got here. It'd be a shame if it burned down. But for $500 a week, we can pretty much guarantee that it won't burn down. Unless you've got faulty wiring and then you're on your own. But I can guarantee you that it won't get burned down by a necklace Italian named Guido and a gallon of gasoline for the low, low cost of $500. A month or a week or whatever it is that the mob extorts from people. The government is the mob. They're only not illegal because they're the ones who make the laws. It's a hell of a racket. It's a hell of a racket. At the White House yesterday, there was reports of shots fired outside the White House. The president was, they reported it as he was whisked out of the press briefing room. He was in the middle of the press briefing. Wasn't really whisked out. The Secret Service didn't whisk him. They could have just grabbed him. But he was moved out, and he comes back, and he's not rattled at all. It's cool under pressure. Joe Biden is still wondering. Joe Biden's still under his table upon hearing reports of this. Before I want to get to the interview, because it's a good interview, and if you have questions about hydroxychloroquine and the politics behind the demonization of a drug that's been around for 65 years, it'll kill you. You're going to enjoy this interview, but I want to bring disappointing news. I don't want to bring disappointing news. I'd mention some disappointing news to those of you out there who are fans of college football. At least as of now, it's not going to be officially announced until later today, and nothing is official until it's actually official. But it looks like college football is not going to happen this year. Now, it doesn't mean that the SEC won't go through with it. The SEC is the league that wins everything anyway. So that's all that really matters. But the Big Ten voted yesterday 12-2. And if you're sitting there doing math, yeah, that's 14. 12-2 to cancel the season. When I was a kid, I can tell my kids, back in my day, the Big Ten only had 10. That's inflation for you. The Big Ten has decided to scrap the season, according to the Detroit Free Press. Now, as somebody, I didn't grow up a fan of the University of Michigan. It was kind of default. My dad watched college football, and I enjoyed being around my dad, and I enjoyed the trappings of bowl day. You know, that January 1st party at the Newtons with the taco bar. But I really couldn't care less about college football, mostly because, see, you grow up in Michigan, there, aside from the Red Wings, there isn't, and they have been terrible lately, there isn't a consistently good team. It's, except maybe Michigan State in basketball, but again, I don't care about basketball. Michigan either loses one of their scrub games at the beginning of the season against a college nobody's ever heard of, or they end up losing, go undefeated and lose to Ohio State. That's just how it is. And if they lose one of their scrub games against Appalachian State or something like that, then they stand a chance of beating Ohio State at the end of the year. It doesn't matter. They ruin their chances of getting a national title. And at that point, I just don't care. So I just adopted the I don't give a damn attitude throughout. But I know there are a lot of people out there who live and die by college football. And with the other conferences, the Mid-Atlantic Conference voting that they're going to get rid of, they're going to cancel their season, it's just not looking good for college football in general. Maybe you'll end up getting the SEC, but that's it. And that's really all that matters. What I want to focus or mention is that this is a gigantic blow to the finances of these schools. And for that aspect of it, quite frankly, I'm kind of glad about it. I think the damage done to these schools will cause them to reprioritize things and maybe, just maybe, cut back some of the BS. That, and coupled with a whole bunch of students who are going, well, why in the hell would I pay full tuition to watch a streaming class online? Part of college tuition for a college that you actually live on, I went to a commuter college, but for a college you actually live on, is the college experience. And if you're taking the college experience away from people, then what in the hell are you paying for? Why would you pay for it? So if anything, maybe, just maybe, this will cause colleges to have to dip into their endowments, which are substantial, and to maybe reevaluate some of the departments. Is the gender and grievance study department necessary? It is the department, the sociology department is, and I wrote about this in my book, it is the department that brings about the least employment at the lowest pay. Why the hell anybody would major in it, I'll never know. But this is how stupid it is. So maybe they look at it and go, all right, if we're going to charge $30,000 a year, maybe we shouldn't, you know, try to steer kids away from jobs that with a master's degree you make $30,000 a year. So you get $250,000 in debt by the time you're all said and done, and you'll never in a million years be able to pay it off. Maybe we should try and discourage people from going into that field. Just a thought. the money lost from football revenues is going to be huge to these schools, but I don't think it's going to impact pro sports. Pro sports is a business. They have different liabilities. You're dealing with adults and signed contracts with all sorts of waivers and lawyers, whereas you're dealing with unpaid participants, students, and colleges that, well, the school has a lot more liability on the line than they do in pro sports. So it makes sense, even though if you look at the data on young people getting sick, and especially young fit people, although not all football players are fit, they're just huge, you could see why this makes sense. Personally, I know they're going to take to the field and protest everything and show their solidarity with Black Lives Matter and blah, blah. And that really doubly just makes me not give a damn that they're going to cancel the season. They can have it. Maybe by the time they come back, they'll be grown up enough to recognize that they don't need to throw a temper tantrum every single time they don't like something, or there's a manufactured crisis. Now would be the time for people to reach out and try and educate. Hey, you know what? These football players could focus actually on their studies. Yeah, right. Anyway, before we get to the Simone Gold interview, let me tell you, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters, so be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you do not want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 today for your chance to win an autographed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years. Yes, please. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Without any further ado, we have a discussion about coronavirus, misinformation, lies, spin, and the truth about hydroxychloroquine with Dr. Simone Gold. You've seen her in video form. Now you get to hear her in audio form.
Okay, joining me right now is Dr. Simone Gold. You remember her from the video that went viral and then needed to be destroyed, of doctors questioning the narrative of the media and the Democratic Party on the use and applications of hydroxychloroquine when it comes to treating COVID-19. Dr. Gold, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Derek.
I appreciate you coming on. First, I got to ask you, when you put together this press conference, or when you agreed to participate in it, did you ever envision, I mean, you had to know that it was going to be controversial to a certain extent, but the extent to which the hounds were released on you, I don't think you could have been prepared for, were you?
Not at all. I did believe it was going to get attention. The purpose was to bring American doctors to the public. So I brought doctors that were really well credentialed and social media together. But never did I think it was going to be, I think it was 18 million views in 8 hours. And never did I think that we would be taken down off social media. Never.
Several times. And even, yeah, you know, they could have problems with bits and pieces, but even when they put pieces up there, it was taken down. And you personally have been demonized. Why do you think that is?
I think people just have to notice how bizarre it is and not even not get used to it, right? It shouldn't be somebody saying to their neighbor, well, okay, it's okay that she was demonized. Not at all. It's so bizarre to think of a physician. I'm a board certified emergency physician. I'm very mainstream until it seems like, 10 minutes ago, I was considered a hero for doing what I'm doing. And all of a sudden, what I'm saying is so dangerous that social media has to take us down. Americans, that is not normal. Don't ever start thinking that's normal. Why it happens, I will just say it's so coordinated that it can't be an accident.
It can't be an accident, and it's been sustained as well. Your reputation is being attacked, the reputation of all the other doctors that have been involved in an attack. You've lost your job. Is that my understanding? The hospital where you practiced emergency medicine said thank you, no thank you?
Exactly what happened. They said
there's no complaints against you.
Video.
There's no complaints against you. It's not like your patients were dying and you were just a quack doctor. It's, you said something against the norm, the acceptable narrative, and therefore you have to go. How is it an embarrassing video? Did they explain it beyond that?
No, and I guess what I want to stress is that I'm very mainstream. So if this can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. You know, I think one of the reasons I wanted to go public is because I am so mainstream. I went to Chicago Medical School. I also went to Stanford University Law School. If you're going to start saying people, and I'm board certified in emergency medicine, very experienced. If you're going to start saying someone like me is not qualified to talk about medical issues, you know, then we've got nothing left really in our country.
What was it that caused you to want to speak up in the first place? Why was it the media coverage? Was it what your personal experience was? Was it a combination of all these things?
You really hit it. The first thing that happened was specifically being told I couldn't give patients a medication that I knew they needed. That was such a red line in the sand for me. I never had anything like that would happen in my life. And I found it so personally painful, just so excruciatingly painful, that I couldn't tolerate it. And then almost as severe was just watching the misinformation on a grand scale. So I'd have an individual and patient in front of me who needed something. And then as I went about my life, like everybody else, I'm watching people believe things that are completely not true. And so it was the two together, but it was specifically that a patient needed something that they couldn't get. And that I was being told, like, to have the knowledge that you need something and then to be the one withholding that thing was too painful.
Can you think of another example of a drug where the government steps in and says you can't administer this drug? You can't prescribe this drug?
No, and I'm so glad you asked that question. That's what Americans need to realize. This has never happened before, ever. It's never been a situation. If I read one more article that it doesn't work or doesn't work, my point is, first of all, it does work. But my point is, it doesn't matter if it doesn't work. It's been FDA approved for 65 years. Leave doctors and patients alone. Let them make a decision as they've always made a decision. If it's FDA approved, then it's between the doctor and the patient. There has never been a situation where state governors have threatened doctors that if they prescribe a drug for a particular reason, they're going to be threatening them with unprofessional conduct, and they're going to have the state pharmacy boards oversee the doctors making the decisions. This has never happened. So I don't care where you stand politically, on the right, on the left, north, south, east, or west. This needs to upset you, and we need to get control of the doctor-patient relationship. This is terrible for patients.
What do you think of the impact of hearing the demonization of hydroxychloroquine, the study in The Lancet that had to be recalled that said not only was it not helpful, but it was killing people? Now, you've got people who take it regularly for rheumatoid arthritis. You've got people who've taken it for malaria and lupus. Are they suddenly thinking, oh, my God, my doctor's been trying to kill me my whole life. What's going on? I mean, there has to be some sort of residual impact on the people, the tens of thousands, I would guess, of Americans who take hydroxychloroquine and have been for years for acceptable medical reasons.
One of the reasons we wrote this white paper, which goes over everything about hydroxychloroquine and is on my website, was simply to bring the facts to the people, because so many people say, I don't even know what to believe. Well, here's a really quick way to know. If you Google hydroxychloroquine, you won't find any articles on it in the mainstream press before 2020. It was simply non-controversial. It's been FDA approved for 65 years. We give it to children. We can give it to babies. We give it to breastfeeding women, pregnant women. We give it to the elderly, and we give it to the immune compromised. Those two groups, elderly and immune compromised, take it for years. Frequently, they take it for decades. It's the most non-controversial of drugs. It is safer than Tylenol. It is safer than aspirin. It is safer than Motrin. It is over-the-counter in much of the world. Completely non-controversial. I don't know how else to make people like understand this, but to say those words, think about what I'm saying, Americans. Think about it. Totally non-controversial, no issue whatsoever, over-the-counter in much of the world, and all of a sudden we keep talking about it. That needs to raise some red flags in your mind.
America's Frontline Doctors, the group that you work with to that put this press conference together, that day and that couple of days when the video came out was one of the biggest news stories in the country, if not the world. Did you hear from or get an invite from CNN or MSNBC to come on?
That's funny that you ask that. No, not from them. I will accept pretty much any interview where the interviewer wants to learn something or share some knowledge with their listeners. So I don't know if I could have accepted their interview request, but I never got one.
How about newspapers? Have you been quoted? Have you been talked to by reporters or just written about?
No, it's almost overwhelmingly just being written about. And I'll tell you one thing. This is why I hired attorney Lynn Wood, who's excellent. You know him by reputation.
Yeah, he represented Nick Sandman.
Yeah, we need the defamation to stop. I am very solidly credentialed to say what I'm saying. And one of the papers, I forgot which one, but I have it, said we were just people standing up there in white coats. Okay, nobody can make that degree of incompetence in journalism. It was impossible, right? They didn't vet anything. They didn't request it. It's easy to prove I'm a doctor. It's easy to prove I'm board certified. That's defamation on its face.
It shocks me. Is it ignorance on behalf of the media that they just, you think, or is it willful? And they can go hand in hand, but to avoid, like, you can say, well, these doctors are crackpots and what do they know? But Henry Ford Medical Center, where I grew up in Detroit, I now live in Maryland, but I grew up in Detroit. Henry Ford Medical Center is a huge hospital system in Michigan. Their study was unequivocal that hydroxychloroquine decreased the rate of mortality by 50%. Yet that was widely, it was reported and then ran away from pretty much. Yeah. As you watch something like that, you can say, okay, you can demonize me, you can attack my colleagues or whatever on a personal level, but now you're ignoring one of the biggest health systems in a pretty big state.
Yes.
What do you say to people who are that committed to a cause? There's no real rationalizing with them.
Yeah. So this whole experience has changed me as a person. I didn't think before this that the medical journals were as corrupt as they are, but it turns out they're really quite corrupt, and that's been corroborated by people in charge of the journals. Richard Horton has even said so. It's been really eye-opening for me just to see the corruption at the medical journals, but it's been even more disturbing, or I guess they're equally disturbing, to see the corruption in the mass media. I believe it's intentional, and I'll say that because I follow this story closely. And for example, when the corrupt Lancet study came out, which, by the way, it wasn't an accident. You cannot have done what they did by accident. There were much too much levels of inconsistencies that it ever could have happened by accident. So they published a corrupt study that they knew was corrupt. At approximately the same time, there was a big study in India about how well hydroxychloroquine worked prophylactically. So if you want to say that the media is innocent, right, they would have reported both. They would have reported the corrupt Lancet study. They didn't know it was corrupt. And they would have also reported the India prophylactic study that it worked. But they really didn't. You'd be hard-pressed to find an American mainstream story that even covered the fact that India had such a successful study. So I don't know how you could say that's anything other than intentional. And I will say that the people that are writing about me, it's weird that they don't try to vet the most basic pieces of information. So I don't know what other conclusion you can draw other than it's intentional.
When you went out there in a very public way, and I imagine there were a lot of doctors who couldn't come, didn't feel like getting involved or whatever, but were sympathetic and have the real world experiences that you've had as a frontline doctor against this virus. Have you heard from your colleagues, I assume off the record without betraying anything, in any sort of numbers going, oh my God, I can't believe what's happening to you. I'm still going to use this, or I still want to use this. What has been the reaction of your colleagues who aren't out there willing to put their face on this?
I think that in America, hydroxychloroquine has been so maligned that I'm thinking about a third of doctors at this point are knowledgeable enough about it, and maybe two thirds have also drunk the Kool-Aid of inaccuracy that the media has been feeding them. But, and there's thousands of doctors that agree with us, and I've personally spoken to hundreds and we find each other on social media. There's a ton of us. But we don't need any additional confirmation. The data is there. If you use chloroquine early, you live. It's that simple. You can't deny it. When you look at other countries that use chloroquine liberally, their death rates are much lower than ours. So for example, countries in sub-Saharan Africa where almost everybody's on chloroquine for malaria prophylaxis, they're all taking it, you know, for years. Their death rate, their case fatality rate is less than 1% of ours. So Western countries that limit access to hydroxychloroquine are the ones with the problem. So the UK and Belgium and the Netherlands, France, America, we all have problems because our governments won't allow us to get the drug. But countries where it's much more liberal, Africa, the exception is South Africa, which acts like us, but Africa, much of Asia, now Latin America, you can get it. They switched their policy a month or 2 months ago. So you don't need any more data than that.
Is it simply politics, or what else would you attribute it to?
Yeah, no, I think it was a dovetailing of multiple interests. So initially, I thought, like everyone else thought, that the media was against hydroxychloroquine because the president praised its possibilities. That was on March 19th at the coronavirus task force meeting. Starting on March 20th, the media said how bad it was. So I also thought that this was the reason. They just didn't like Trump, so they didn't like the drug. But I found out 6 or 8 weeks after that, when they came up with the remdesivir trial, which wasn't that great, it just was modestly helpful. It wasn't very helpful. It didn't cut mortality. It just kind of cut hospital stay a few days. So when the media gave that one a free pass, I started to get suspicious and I started investigating. What I discovered is one fact that is so shocking. It has completely changed my perception. That fact is this. Hydroxychloroquine was over the counter in much of the world. France, it was over the, and France pulled it off the shelves, made it from over the counter back to prescriptions called List 2 Poisonous Substance on January 13th, 2020, 2 months before the president said anything, more than 2 months before he said anything positive about hydroxychloroquine, France took it off its shelves. You have to ask yourself, well, that's really bizarre. We knew chloroquine probably worked for this pandemic that everyone was getting so afraid of, because we had a study from 2005 in virology saying it worked against SARS-CoV-1. Why would France all of a sudden pull away the most promising treatment for SARS-CoV? Very strange, very strange. That was 8 weeks plus before the president said anything about it.
So then why do you think that is? Because that sounds a little bit like an episode of The X-Files to me.
Yeah, it really does. And that's how it affected me. So I say that if you take out the first early contender that looks really promising and in fact has now shown itself to work, the people that are still standing are the ones that benefit. So remdesivir made by Gilead benefits, vaccines benefit, anybody that it was a competitor to hydroxychloroquine benefits. So I think the fact that the president said it was possibly helpful was just a bonus for the media. But the main people that are driving this, I think, are pharmaceuticals.
And there was a kind of a rush to get hands. What is the difference between chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine? There are two different drugs.
Yeah. They're both derived from quinine. Hydroxychloroquine is the more modern version. They are equally effective, but hydroxychloroquine is a little less symptomatic. Some people get nausea or GI upset, which is much less common with the hydroxychloroquine, and we really only use hydroxychloroquine in America.
So when you see these drugs being pulled or these drugs being demonized, and patients, I imagine, when you were in the hospital would come in, one of the first questions had to be, can I get this drug? Should I take this drug? What would be the profile? Because I know there are people listening who are obviously afraid that they're going to get this or think they have it. What would be, if it's a normal 35-year-old with mild symptoms, asymptomatic, do they need hydroxychloroquine? Is it just that you take it for a prophylactic, or is it you're sick or you fit a profile?
So this is the most important question of the interview, because we're living in a state of fear, because people are not living their normal lives and they're letting governors make dictatorial rules because people are operating from a level of fear, so they're accepting it. So the first thing to do is not be afraid. Because if you come down with COVID, the odds are you're going to do just fine. And if you need medicine, we have it. And here are the facts. If you're under 60 without comorbid conditions, your chances of dying from COVID are less than your chances of dying from influenza. So first, just absorb that. In other words, don't be living in fear over this. So let's say you're under 60, no comorbid conditions. I don't think you need prophylaxis. Like, I don't think I need prophylaxis. But if you're over 60 or you've got comorbid conditions, you've got specifically obesity, diabetes are the most risky. But let's say you had serious heart disease, for example, and you're in that category and you're over 75, let's say. I'll do 60 to 75 in a moment. But over 75, comorbid conditions, you should certainly consider being on it prophylactically. You absolutely should get it if you come down with the virus, and you should take it early. Because you take it early, you do very, very well, early treatment or prophylaxis. The only other people I think should consider being on prophylaxis are people that are so anxiety ridden that they're not living their lives. So if you're a healthy 80-year-old, but you're so scared because you've been hearing about this, then you should prophylax and then go about living your life. And I met a young lady last week who's 20 years old, who's so anxious she hasn't left the home. And she's covered up in the home with a mask and gloves in her home. This is a girl who tends towards anxiety anyway. But that's her baseline personality. She should be on prophylaxis and she can go out in her life. Why I'm so committed to this idea is because the amount you need for prophylaxis is very, very tiny. The lupus and the RA amount is 400 milligrams a day. The prophylaxis amount is 400 milligrams a week, a seventh of the treatment dose that we already use for most people. We're talking about something very trivial. In Africa, they call it Sunday Sunday. They mean you pop the pill on Sunday and then you pop it again next Sunday, the same way we take Tylenol. In Indonesia, it's sold over the counter in the vitamin section. In Iran, it's sold over the counter. It's over the counter in much of the world. It's safer than Tylenol. That's the dose. It's 400 milligrams once a week and daily zinc is the prophylaxis dose.
Are you worried about losing your medical license?
You know, they all have a fight on their hands. I've got the best attorney in the country and they have no basis. So, no.
That has never stopped a bureaucracy before, though.
Right.
That's why
right.
I'm just curious because they.
Well,
they
one of our doctors was threatened by the state medical board. They sent her a letter 1 week after, threatening her license.
You've been attacked, obviously, by the media and by politicians. Have you been embraced by any politicians?
For sure. I want to give a shout out to Representative Perry in Pennsylvania, Representative Biggs in Arizona. There are some, and I am thinking of a way to kind of promote them because they are for freedom for the people, right? They are there for their constituents and their citizens. They're not trying to restrict their citizens. But, you know, we are really at the mercy right now of state governors. State governors are the ones withholding the medication from the people.
Well, it is very frustrating because I've seen Arizona say correct. No, you can't have it. You've
That's
seen
the governor.
Ohio.
The governor of Arizona has been very restrictive.
Governor.
Yeah, but I don't understand it.
And Ohio, the health secretary there said no or whatever it was.
That was
the governor came out against it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So what happened is that was a power play by the state pharmacy board. Americans, wake up. If you want pharmacists to be controlling your relationship with your doctor, that's where we're going if people don't start complaining. What do I mean by that? The doctor and the patient have a conversation. The doctor recommends something. The patient takes that prescription to the pharmacy, and then the pharmacist gets to overpower the doctor. Really? Is that the country we want to live in? No, slam on pharmacists. I love pharmacists, but they're not as well trained. But more importantly, they're not having long conversations with patients. And also, they tend to be employees of large corporations, so they're much more vulnerable to being pressured themselves. So the state pharmacy board made a power play, I think because of our summit, to be honest with you. So they made a power play to stop doctors, and the governor came out and said, no, you're not going to do that.
I have just a couple of more questions for you. The data that is being collected on the deaths, I had John Lott on the show last week, and he told me that he's been looking in the data. His PhD is an economist, and he said that if somebody is sick in the hospital and they're in isolation for 14 days, they have a serious case of it, that they are tested every day, even when they start to recover, to make sure they have to test 2 days in a row or two tests in a row that they are negative for the virus, that each one of those tests that comes back positive counts as a new case. Correct. Is that what you're finding? Yeah. So we're in a situation where we could actually, I expect we don't know much about the Spanish flu of 1918 because the data collection was haphazard. There was no national network. Computers didn't exist. But we're now in a situation where when we come through this, we could end up having learned nothing useful for the future. Yeah. Is that true? Am I oversimplifying it? Because if we collect garbage data, there's nothing you can mine from garbage data that will help you in the future.
Right. I'm laughing because you're basically correct. The only number that's marginally helpful is mortality, because at least it's a black and white event. It's not completely reliable because a lot of those numbers are overstated. My personal speculation is it's off by 20 or 30%, but at least it's a real event. The testing is out of control. People get tested multiple times for all sorts of reasons. And, you know, you can have six positives for on one patient. Also, in some states, if a person is positive and they live with four other people, and two of those people have coughs, I'm talking, they can have an allergy and they're coughing from an allergy, those two people can be counted as positive without even taking a test. It's unbelievably ridiculous, the testing. And what really bothers me is that the average American hears these numbers like they're meaningful. First of all, the word case doesn't mean a sick, coughing, febrile person. It doesn't even mean a sick person. It often or typically is an asymptomatic person who had a test. So first of all, substitute that word case and make it positive test result, like on a slip of paper. So yes, I'm afraid that we're not going to learn very much when this is over.
And how do we not know more about this by now? Maybe the way that it impacts the body and individual human beings, we don't know. We know some comorbidities, but we don't necessarily, we keep adding new symptoms, it seems like, all the time. But I'm talking about, we're still questioning whether or not it's airborne, how long it can stick around in the air, how long it lives on various surfaces. They tell you wear a mask, wear gloves, wipe down everything. And then they tell you, you probably don't have to do the gloves and the wiping down. And then they say, well, maybe you should. It seems like 6 months in, those would be the things that even I could figure out a test for at this point.
Yeah. I haven't looked at that data for a while, but we actually do have the answers to that question, those questions, but they're not being published. So I find a lot of what the CDC recommends to be very baffling. It does not live that long on surfaces. It especially does not live on surfaces outside when there's heat. Okay, so those numbers are available. They are known numbers. I don't want to misstate them. But what we're being told or what people are doing, wiping down surfaces and living in fear, and it does not match the science.
Well, because, you know, you go to the grocery store and you want to dip everything into a vat of rubbing alcohol because you're told it could get you there. And odds are it's not there. But I mean,
so here's a fact that you should hang on to. Viruses overwhelmingly enter the human body through the nostrils, a little bit through the eyes, the conjunctiva, like the inner part, whites, you know, where your eye, you know, starts. Overwhelmingly, though, it's the nostrils. So this just is common sense. If you touch something that happens to have the virus on it, then you bring that up to your nostrils and you do that with enough quantity of virus, then you can get the virus. But the odds of some virus just sitting on a product and then you touch the product and then you touch your nose of you getting it it's really far-fetched. And there's no real data to support that's actually what's happening. But if you're worried about it, listeners, just wash your hands and don't touch your nostrils. Very good sound advice, not just in 2020, but in 1900 and in 2030, 2040. Just try not to touch your nostrils.
It's a good thing. Keep your fingers out of your nose is something I tell my daughters all the time. Lastly, my best friend from high school is a doctor up in New Jersey now, and he is in southern New Jersey, so it was hit hard, but not nearly as hard as northern Jersey with its proximity to New York. He told me that, yes, they saw a lot of patients at the beginning, but now the hospital is kind of a ghost town, and that normally the cases that they would have been overwhelmed with were flu and colds and possibly pneumonia and things like that. Those weren't happening. If you could just give a word of advice to people who've been avoiding going to the doctor like a plague for something that's bothering them because they're afraid that that's just a nest of COVID-19. And secondly, could that be a positive side effect that we are now scrubbing down, like we're all getting ready for surgery, that maybe flus and colds in the future, we will be much better off when they come around if we keep this habit going?
I think that for your first question, it's very important to do medical screenings for things that are potentially lethal. So if you are in the age group that you need to have a colonoscopy to screen for colon cancer, you need to do those things. That's really important. The hospitals are actually really safe, in my opinion. I'm an emergency doctor. They test everybody who gets admitted as an inpatient. They separate the COVID patients from the non-COVID patients. So they really, you shouldn't fear going to a hospital. It's quite the opposite. It's really the hospitals that were very restrictive about letting patients do procedures. So they finally came back. But in the thick of it, we were, unless you were in the New York area, for the most part, hospitals were empty. It was terrible. It was so empty that the hospitals were laying off people. And now when you go to a hospital, when you hear about a hospital being full, overwhelmingly, hospitals laid off staff. And when you go into a hospital now, if they say that they're full, it's typically not because there's not the hospital bed, but it's typically because they don't have enough staff because they furloughed or laid off their staff, which is a shame. But please go and get your regular screenings that you normally need to get. And in terms of, I mean, it just makes sense to just, you know, wash your hands frequently, especially because coming in through the nostrils is the common way people catch viruses. Just use common sense, everybody, and stop living in fear.
Amen. Tell people where they can find more about your work, Dr. Simone Gold.
So we have America's Frontline Doctors. They took down our site. So we
right, I know. That's tough to keep track.
Acronym is harder, much harder, but it's A, F as in Frank, LDS, AFLDS.com. You will find a white paper all about hydroxychloroquine and the fact that it's being kept from the American people. You find the reference articles about it, and you'll just find good, useful information. I just want to say that the number one question I get asked is, how can I find a doctor or the medicine if I think I need it? We're going to be bringing those resources to you very soon this week, AFLDS.com.
That means the target on your back is going to get all that much bigger. Dr. Simone Gold, thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you so much.
There you go, a smart and fascinating lady. Do your own research, open your mind, and recognize, and never forget how they lied to you, how the media lied about everything, everything, because Orange Man bad. Speaking of Orange Man, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. Keep telling you, he wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. Be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. The offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and lucky you, you're one of them. All you got to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K. Text that to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Okay, tomorrow on the program, I wanted to see about getting it today, but then the opportunity to interview Dr. Gold sort of fell in my lap and was like, I got to take that. We go down memory lane a little bit. Joe Biden, during one of the debates back in September of last year, it took me a long time to find this audio because it seems to have disappeared, or not completely, but the left makes things very difficult. They don't disappear them completely. They just bury them when they're inconvenient to somebody. And Joe Biden has a lot of inconvenient things out there. Joe Biden gave a horrible answer that was widely decried as racist by liberals just last September. I'll tell you, we'll play the audio of what Joe said, and then we'll give you some of the reaction to it. And this was, of course, when there were viable options. The Democrats were like, this is disgusting. This is wildly racist. It's inappropriate. He's out of touch. He should not be our nominee because he's so racist. Now, these very same people are all like, yeah, I'm all in for Joe Biden. He's the greatest hope for America ever. Kind of funny. So we'll illustrate that tomorrow, along with keeping you up to date on all the news that's fit to bitch about. Thank you for listening. Again, the website, if you want to get this swearing show, the Week in Bleepin' Review is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. $5 a month. $5 a month costs you nothing. And it's the only way to get it now. So there you go. And then I'll do some other things there in the future. I'm thinking of other things I can do for the Patreons or the patrons at Patreon. I don't know what they're called. I assume they're called patrons. But for the people up there, maybe post blog posts or videos or whatever, Q&As. I don't know. I don't know if anybody wants to hear anything about my life. It just seems weird. But if you do, we can have some fun over there. Otherwise, be back here tomorrow for the fun and the news. Have a great Tuesday. See you tomorrow.